From our top secret, highly secure headquarters, this is the Spurs Insider, back after a holiday hiatus, back after the grand return of the local Cagers to the local domed stadium, which was quite a night. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the trade deadline coming up, but we passed the halfway point of the NBA season. It's been a month or so since we've convened at the secure location. Do we want to just generalize about the state of the local Cagers at this moment in time, mid-January 2023, Jeff McDonald?
They're bad.
Are they worse than we expected?
They're not bad enough, though.
They're not bad enough. They're winning too much.
As bad as it's been, as hard as it is to watch at times, as many of the losses that have piled up in this heaping pile of losses, not bad enough. They're still fourth to worst in the NBA, and I don't know that they can catch the teams below them.
Well, you know, that's part of the reason why the NBA flattened the lottery odds a few years ago. The percentages aren't that much worse for fourth than they are for 1-3. The danger is other teams move ahead of them in the lottery. If you don't get lucky in the lottery, you could bottom out to sixth or seventh.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is it's not just about how high you can get, but how far you can fall.
I think that's what I just said, but go ahead and make it.
Well, I mean, if you have the, it's not, you can look at it and say, oh, if you have the third worst record, well, that's a 14% chance to get the first pick. If you have the fourth worst, that's a 12.5%. Oh, that's only a difference of 1.5%. What's the big deal? The big deal is if you finish with the fourth worst record, you can fall a lot farther down the pecking order.
I think that's what I just said, but go ahead and repeat it.
Well, it's not just a matter of teams scooting in front of you in the standings or scooting below you in the standings.
I meant teams picking ahead of you in the lottery.
Right.
Let's say the 9th, 10th, and 11th teams in the lottery win the top three spots.
Well, yeah.
Well, then if you're fourth, you fall to seventh.
Is seventh the worst that they can fall to, I think, technically?
The point is, if you finish with the fourth worst record, you have double the chance of finishing with the number six pick than you do of winning the first pick.
Right.
So that's kind of the impetus for getting into that top three. It's not just the enhanced odds of what.
But I don't think there's not that much difference between fourth and third. The third, if you finish third, you have a better chance of finishing fifth than you do a first.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's that's the not same. Sixth. Well,
we need a whiteboard to explain all this.
Yes, we went right into the esoterica to start this new podcast.
Yes,
but the point is, the Spurs are bad, but not bad enough. But maybe bad enough because you still have a chance to win, Victor. He's the big prize.
You'd feel better if they were worse.
And if you've been watching, which I know you haven't, but if you've been watching the potential picks in this draft, this is going to be a very good draft.
That's fine. Yeah.
Not just Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson, who have two great names, but also you have Brandon Miller from Alabama. I think he would have been the best player in last year's draft. You'd be fine picking third in this draft. I think that guy's going to be great. Jeff's favorite, Amen Thompson.
Lots of great names.
A great player who could have been first last year.
Would you say that he could be the answer to the Spurs prayers?
For the sixth or seventh time on this podcast, you've made that joke.
I don't think we've even mentioned that fellow on this podcast.
And I don't think I've laughed one time.
I think you're talking to other people behind our backs.
Good job. Good effort. Tom has not weighed in at all on this frivolity, this nonsense. What are your thoughts on the state of the Spurs halfway through this season?
They got to stop playing. They're 2-0 against teams without their superstars.
Yeah.
Beating Brooklyn and Milwaukee without their huge guns. But, they just keep picking up wins. And
you say that. They lost five in a row. They lost five in a row before they beat them.
I guess they're not going to lose them all.
Yeah.
I think it's if you go back to the beginning of the season when we forecasted what the season would look like, I think it's about what it's been.
Yeah.
And in terms of their winning percentage, it's right where we thought it would be. It's just three teams have been really, really bad. And Detroit totally mailed it in. Their top picks in the past couple of years, you know, Cade Cunningham's out, I think, forever.
Well, hopefully not forever.
Forever, I've heard. Houston's lost 97 or 98 in a row. The other team down there is Charlotte, who blew out the local Cagers in
the opening
the opening game of the season, and I don't think it's won since.
I know. After that opening, you're like, the Spurs are going to be just fine.
Yeah.
They need to play more games in the Alamo Dome, where they have a losing streak,
yes.
where they make tons of money,
yes.
beer sells, everyone has a great time. Even if you get blown out by 37 or whatever it was.
I understand you're not the host of this podcast, but that's how you do a segue, by the way. That's pretty good.
Friend of the podcast, Tim Reynolds from Miami, of the Associated Press, noted the other night during that game, which we will talk about shortly, the local Cagers began the night ranked 28th in the NBA in home attendance. They finished the night 15th. So that was a good business move for the Spurs, if nothing else. And aside from making money and trying to make something out of a rough season at the box office, at the turnstiles, are there still turnstiles? I think there's metal detectors instead of turnstiles now. But aside from that, it was just a feel good night, wasn't it?
It was a smashing success.
Yeah,
the atmosphere was just unbelievable. As Pop said, there was a lot of adult beverages.
Right.
Sold and drank, and everyone had a great time.
And you know, I didn't partake in that. I was working, but I did buy a Diet Pepsi,
uh-huh.
like a 20-ounce Diet Pepsi. That was $6.50. Yeah. So I can only imagine what the beer prices were.
I mean,
they must have made a killing off that.
The fans loved it. I mean, they were coming up to the court, taking pictures of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was really
well. Cool. There were two idiots taking video of tag team performing at halftime.
Yeah. Yep. Whoop, scoop, there it is. Part of the reason why so many adult beverages were consumed, I assume, was that there were no good seats in the house in terms of watching basketball.
No.
That is not a place where you want to watch basketball in the future.
San Antonio Fiesta type of event.
Yeah, exactly.
And people just loved it. They had a great time.
Even the people who were sitting right behind us, we were in the third row. By the way, in the third row, you could not see anything above a player's waist below a player's waist.
Basically. I had a good view of Sean Elliott's back of his head.
I saw Jakob Poeltl's torso, but like Trey Jones probably didn't exist in that game. I didn't see him one time.
Well, we were assigned those seats.
Yes,
and that's great. And there were no complaints. The people directly behind us had worse seats and probably paid like $1,600.
Yeah.
So, but they had a good time too, I assume, because they got to see Jeff McDonald in action, Tom Orsborn in action.
So much nostalgia. That's the thing. People just came. They brought, you know, their kids, and they're reminiscing about even before the Alamo Dome, the Hemisphere days. It was just a celebration of all things Spurs.
It salvaged a good moment in a season that's just, you know, dreadful record-wise. And that's by coincidence. Like, you couldn't have predicted years ago that the Spurs' 50th anniversary season would be their worst season. That just so happens that it came during the season. But people have asked me, like, could you imagine what would have happened if they'd done an Alamo Dome game like in 2014 or when those teams were so great? I think this is better.
I think it was better
this way.
And what was it, 3 years in the planning? They really
They
did a great job.
Yeah. I think this was much better because it's like nobody cared about the game.
Right.
Nobody cared they lost by 31 and like basically didn't show up. Yeah. Nobody cared they couldn't see the game, whether they were up in the rafters or they were standing room only, which was just a cocktail party. It was like being at the Kentucky Derby or something.
They all brought their matches.
It's like you said, though. It was a Fiesta type event. It was just the people that wanted to – they just wanted to celebrate – the city and the community and the team.
Yeah,
it was a pretty good night.
I'd almost this is just a side road we don't need to go down. But I'm not convinced that they didn't know 3 years ago that this season was going to be terrible.
Like, well, sure.
And the Spurs plan everything, and the Spurs have planned for this draft for a long time, knowing that this is the perfect year to bottom out. And that during this 50th anniversary season, they're going to need a big fiesta, and this would be a perfect time to do it.
But the point is they're doing it because of the 50th anniversary season, not because they were bad.
We're splitting hairs.
Yes.
We're splitting hairs. But I do think that the Spurs plan a lot of stuff.
I mean, if Jeremy Sochan had turned out to be the next Tim Duncan and they're a 30-win team right now.
Right.
Yeah, you never know with how draft's going to work out. But
they're still doing this thing because it's the 50th anniversary, not because it's a poor team.
And the Spurs aren't going to hold this record for long.
Mm-mm. No, someone else is going to do this very quickly.
Because it worked so well.
Yeah.
if it had been kind of a disaster, no one had loved it.
I mean, you could do it. You could do it at a venue of that size where people could see.
Yeah,
once again, the league is following the Spurs.
The league, correct? Yeah. Yes. And it's I'm not sure which city will do it next.
Cuban's gonna get the idea.
Yeah, Jerry Jones. Maybe.
I'm gonna bet
but
on the Lakers.
It has to be
for LeBron.
I'm not sure the Lakers will do it.
SoFi Stadium. Yeah.
LeBron's last game. That's or anyone really, because really it wasn't even the Bulls that set the record, but it was because of Michael Jordan. They set it in the Georgia Dome for his last game. Right. That was the idea before
on Dallas. Cuban and Jerry Jones teaming up.
Cuban already has the record for the largest crowd at an NBA game of any type. That was that All Star game, which there was 100,000 people.
It was an All Star game, not a Mavericks game.
Right. But so I'm just saying he could do it again. But it's going to take a wherever it happens again. No, it won't be what this was, because this was an authentic celebration of history.
Yes.
It was the building where the team once played. There's no other dome in the world where an NBA team used to play. Yeah. Like the Silver Dome hosted the Pistons for a while.
Sky Dome,
that was blown up.
They could do Rogers Center.
Sky Dome, I guess. But it has to be it would have to be in a place where people show up for something like this.
Yeah.
Like the San Antonio is very unique in that regard. Yeah. And it was a celebration of everything that makes the Spurs
a unique
franchise.
Like the hockey
franchise.
Teams will do like an outdoor game. Maybe an NBA team needs to do that. Like the Bulls need to play at Soldier Field or something.
That'd be something.
In the middle of February.
That'd be great. Gracious, that would be cold.
It would be great.
Although Soldier Field might not exist for that much longer. We'll see.
They better get it in.
The players already wear tights. I was about to say they couldn't wear shorts, but no one wears really just short pants anymore in NBA games.
They don't wear short pants.
Well, they wear short pants over tights. You mentioned earlier if Jeremy Sochan had turned into Tim Duncan. I guess my question to you is, what's up with young Jeremy if we're going to talk about basketball again?
He's probably already said more words on an NBA court than Tim Duncan ever did in 20 years.
Yeah? And do opponents like that?
They do not.
Uh-huh.
From what I'm understanding, they do not.
And that's exactly what the Spurs thought they were getting in this young, cantankerous.
Part of his skill set.
Yeah.
So he's like top eight among NBA rookies in scoring and rebounds and assists. I guarantee you he leads NBA rookies in trash talk per 100 possessions.
Uh-huh.
Like it's not even close. And like it's kind of funny to watch other players like almost trying to process this. Like, who is this guy? What is happening? He's got 4 points in the fourth quarter and he's like giving me crap.
What amuses me are the specific players and the specific types of players that he's annoyed. You have Steven Adams, who's just that type of guy. Everybody kind of gets into it. Steven Adams. He's kind of an instigator himself.
Yes.
And then you have Markieff Morris.
Same.
Who's the same type of guy. Like he's the player that opponents just go crazy over because he like George Costanza said about Woody Woodpecker, he's an instigator. And
neither guy you'd really want to get in a tussle with.
Right. Jeremy Sochan is not picking like easy targets to get
The Morris brothers back in the day had a literal felony assault charge against them,
yes.
Which we should say they were found not guilty. But
I'm not sure they were found not guilty. I'm not sure if it was pursued.
I Googled it today.
Okay.
I read a not guilty.
Okay. There you go.
But anyway.
I know they were not convicted.
They were definitely charged, though.
Yes.
The point is, they're not the type of people you want to get into tussles with unless you're
Jeremy doesn't mind.
You got Zach Collins. On your back, you know, defending you.
Yeah. Well, when Zach Collins is the one playing the peacemaker, you're like.
Yeah, Zach Collins has been in some stuff too.
But I love it. I don't know. I love it.
How about basketball wise with young Jeremy?
I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about his instigating. It's much more fun.
He's a better instigator than a player at this point.
It's not the type of player that you normally associated with the Spurs back in the day. Like, is there another? I mean, you could go back to Rodman, but I mean, like the
Bruce Bowen.
Bowen.
Spurs have had a lot of
you're
guys
right.
like that. Actually.
Well, yeah, you're right. Bowen's a good example.
He's going to be a really good player.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, you see it every night. There's little areas where you know he stands out, and his shooting's going to get better. Remarkable, the free throw shooting with the one-arm technique.
It took –
it's
all
just
it took.
Remarkable. Yeah.
It's all it took. He missed the first two, and then I think he hasn't missed since.
Yeah. Yeah.
The young neophyte, even overcoming some some personal adversity in terms of the game that we covered at Madison Square Garden was probably the worst game of his pro career.
Yeah.
Just couldn't make a shot.
5 second.
Couldn't
violation
make a difference. Couldn't make a difference during the game. 5 second violation, which was kind of a quintessential rookie mistake.
Walt Frazier just all over him.
All over the young neophyte. Just said he was clueless, had no idea. Yeah. And came back and has played really well since.
Yeah.
So that's been, if you want to talk about what this season was supposed to be, it was losing a lot and hoping that guys like Jeremy Sochan this is kind of the mixed bag, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, the pieces of your future.
So Sohan's going to develop a lot. He's 19. But even if he doesn't develop much, he's already looks like a guy that can help a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the key. Yeah. Help a good
maybe
team.
He's not a star. Maybe he is. But maybe he's not a star. But he's a guy that could be definitely be a piece of a good team if you got the right mix around him.
So that has been a successful aspect of this rebuilding, quote-unquote, tanking season. You're losing a bunch of games, seeing some progress from Jeremy Sochan. How about the other two guys I mentioned who are clearly pieces of the future, Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell, two kind of different stories there.
Keldon's had 36 the other night. That's hard to do in the NBA, although not as hard anymore. He still looks to me like a guy you want him to be your – if you're going to be a really good team, you want him to be your third option?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Vassell's a number two? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
But Vassell, you'd like to see – part of a tanking season is not pushing guys through marginal injuries and finding reasons to sit your best guy. But then in the case of Devin Vassell, who's an up-and-coming player in his third season, these reps are important. So sure. That's – There's a needle to thread there in terms of getting him the personal development he needs and protecting that lottery spot.
Sounds like he'll be back after he's injured now. Surgery needs.
I think the
sounds like he'll be back after the All-Star break and
obviously the injury was legitimate.
Get those
if you go under the knife.
Yes.
Yeah. The scope.
There's tanking, but then there's not like. I think forcing your guys to get unnecessary surgery is a little bit.
That would be extreme.
A little bit extreme.
It might be a surgery that he wouldn't have.
If the Spurs did that, that's a joke.
If they were in a playoff race, it might be a surgery he wouldn't have taken right away.
Sure.
Might as well get it done.
Here. Sure.
Where else do you want to go?
The other two rookies, you see they play less and they're a little shakier. I mean, Blake Wesley's just barely been back from his own injury. But they also show flashes of things that you like to see and what they can be. And you also remember that they're 19.
We know what Jakob Poeltl is.
Trade bait.
A lot of other teams.
Yes.
Yeah, trade bait.
Yeah. Deadline is approaching.
He's someone you could keep as well for the cost. It just kind of depends on what you get offered and –
I think he's not a guy.
How much you value
I think him. He's not a guy you have to say we have to trade him. What's your best offer? Oh, it's 2 second round picks. Well, okay, we'll take that. I don't think you take that. I think you can pass on that and wait. But
they got more for Young last year. Which is incredible. So they should get a number one overall pick for Poeltl just based on that
first round pick for Thad Young. Then
I wonder though. On that note, if we're about to see a sea change or at least an adjustment in how teams are valuing those type of picks, because it went a little extreme last year and the big trades have not worked out, like the Rudy Gobert trade, the
DeJounte Murray trade.
The Timberwolves gave up 4 first round picks for Rudy Gobert and they're still like in the play-in spot. The Atlanta Hawks gave up 3 first-round picks plus a swap to the San Antonio Spurs for DeJounte Murray, and the Hawks have won, 2 more games than the Spurs have. That's an exaggeration, but not by much. The Hawks are
– they're under 500.
Under 500 at this moment. So maybe teams are thinking we shouldn't be so loose with these picks, and they might be harder to pry away this year.
It only takes one.
Takes one.
One team that thinks Poeltl is the missing piece. Here's a first round pick.
Yeah. It worked out better for Mitchell in Cleveland than it has those other two. And then you got to look at fit with a lot of those guys. How was Gobert going to fit with Towns? That was questionable.
You have to be sure. Young. Did it work out? Did the Thad Young deal work out for?
I would say that it did not.
Did not. No, absolutely not.
And that wasn't a huge elite top of the round first round pick, but it's still a first round pick. Those things have value, and
that was the one they used on Wesley, or And I got him confused.
Well,
is that the Branham pick?
Our viewers slash listeners are screaming right now. There's so many of them over these years. I'm not sure it's been used yet.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. We'll fix it in post.
We'll fix that in post.
If our producer Luis is just all over it, I'm sure he can just edit in. Doesn't matter.
You keep talking. I'm going to Google.
I'll keep talking. But the Jakob Pertl thing, another factor to consider is even if your Spurs have some lottery luck this year, if they end up winning the rights to Victor Wembanyama, if they get second or third and end up with Scoot Henderson or Amen Thompson or Brandon Miller, like Jakob Pertl is a guy who could play with all those guys. He's a productive center. Just because you draft a 7-4 guy doesn't mean that, like, Victor Wembanyama shoots threes. He's a stretch guy. You still need a dirty work center type of guy, a guy who can anchor a defense. And Jakob can be that guy. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that you have to get rid of him to make room for the next group. And he's going to be a free agent. The Spurs would have to make the best offer to keep him. But I guess I'm just echoing what you guys are saying is if you don't get a first round pick, if you don't get something you really like, you do not have to deal him at the deadline. Unlike last year with Thad Young, where there was no reason to bring him back.
Yeah, I think the more likely trade candidates are probably Richardson and McDermott.
Right.
Which are probably a couple of second round picks for either.
Right. Those aren't franchise altering deals or whatever. So
will the Spurs pay Jakob?
I mean, they're projected to have, mm-hmm, I think, top five in the league salary cap space, mm-hmm, and there's no obvious free agents out there. Like, the free agent market is sort of drying up over the past couple of summers. There's not guys that you really want to go after.
Sign your free agent.
Your guy.
Yeah. They got over like $20 million now, don't they?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
They'll have a lot this summer, depending on how things work out. It's not the greatest time in the world to have a bunch of salary cap space, but – you know, if you look at the list of top available free agents this summer, Jakob might be top 10. So it's just like signing a top 10 free agent who happened to already play for you. Did you get anything?
Yes, it was a pick they conveyed last year.
Okay.
I can't really suss out whether it was the 25th or 20th. I can't remember who. I suppose Boston finished better than Toronto did last year.
Uh-huh.
So it was probably the 20th pick that they got from the Raptors, which would be the
That worked out.
Malachi Branham pick.
That worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So in the grand scheme of things, even when you're losing and having tough times, you look for enjoyment where you can find it. And it was found at
He's
the
trying Alamo to wrap
Dome.
This mm-hmm. quickly. Wait.
It was found at the Alamo Dome. And then a memorable – it'll go down in Spurs lore.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you remember most about that night, Tom?
Trying to get out of the freaking parking lot because of the there's a whole like a whole.
There were so many memories. I don't know where to start. I really don't. But it was like, you know, in some ways, it was like one of those paintings where you see all these celebrities gathered together,
like the dogs playing poker.
Yeah, the presidents playing poker, the Sopranos.
Which paintings have celebrities on them?
What the dogs, the president's playing poker. You got the two parties.
It's probably only paying Jeff Kinnane.
You looked here and there. You see Tony Parker sitting next to Becky Hammon and Avery Johnson there. And yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Some fan tried to take a picture with Finger game.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was just there were just so many glimpses and images of Spur history.
The guy said, aren't you Clint Eastwood?
Uh-huh.
Well, he looks more like Damian Lewis.
Walter Matthau?
Major winners from Band of Brothers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Robert Downey Sr.
But anyway, my point is, you know, you're struggling. You're having a tough time. You find your enjoyment where
you're trying to wrap this up, aren't you?
Well, we got something to do today.
Just say, just tell everyone to keep it real, Tom, and we can bolt out of here.
There's no rule that says I have to say the last word. You could wrap it up if you want to. Well, but before you do, you mentioned paintings on your trip to Madison Square Garden and to the Barclays Center in New York.
Yes.
You spent your days when you could, when you weren't chasing news stories in Central Park or in the West Village.
Yeah.
You went to the MoMA, didn't you?
I did. It was packed. It was raining that day. So. Uh-huh. Everyone and their you know, mother were in there. Yeah, it was crowded, but yeah, it's great, great time.
And you saw the paintings of Edward Hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's known to portray.
He's a guy from Easy Rider, right?
No, he's the guy from Blues Traveler.
Oh, gotcha.
Nighthawk.
Gotcha. He has all the harmonicas.
Nighthawk is his most famous painting.
The only two people in the world that got that joke.
Which depicts the isolation of American society. Loneliness.
Yeah. And you noted that many of his subjects were gaunt.
Yes.
Back in the day,
people. 1930s. That's you know.
They didn't eat as much. There was not as much Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Not as much.
Those were lean times.
They were lean times.
But even in those lean times, people found enjoyment.
They did.
Yeah. They found reasons to have fun.
Lean times for the Spurs. Yes. Lean time for the local Cagers. Yes. Yeah. Found room for enjoyment. Yes. Tom wants me to wrap this up. So I will tell you, in your lean times.
Even though there was wrath, there was also grapes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
That's right. Wow.
That's true.
John Steinbeck, by the way,
Tom Joad,
worked on Madison Square Garden. He was a construction worker for a period in New York, and he helped lay the foundation of the arena we were just at.
And those were lean times for John Steinbeck. He ended up finding his grapes, overcoming his wrath, finding enjoyment in life, just like the local Cagers found enjoyment in their return to the Alamo Dome, just like you find in listening to this ridiculous podcast. And until the next time, I ask you to take care of each other and keep it real.
Peace.